and brightest day, in blackest night, all other podcasts tremble in fright. Losers cower before the power. Orange is lust, and blues you can trust. Indigos feel, and white ones heal. Yellow scare, and green ones dare. That sapphire love and black hands glove will rock your foundation without hesitation. Chad and Mars face evil's might. Respect their power, for they'll make you see the light.
Hi, everybody. I'm Chad Bokelman.
I'm Mark Marble.
And this is the Lantern Cast.
Episode 657, I think.
I believe so. No new issue this week, but that's good because we got San Diego Comic-Con to catch up on.
Yeah, even though I don't think there was as much stuff coming out of Comic-Con as we thought there was going to be.
No, it could be a relatively shortish episode.
I wouldn't bet on that, but I'm just saying based on pure content, I think we all were hoping to have a little bit more than we got.
Do we want to save the big one for last, or do we want to start with it?
I'm assuming you mean the big one is Lanterns?
Yes.
Well, again, even that's... Let's save it. Let's save it to the end.
Okay. All right, where do you want to start then?
Let's do... Well, we can't really go through the... We can't really go through the Comic-Con, the exclusive figures, because we thought we were going to be able to answer the mystery of whether we got the figures we put claims in for. But since they're dragging their feet on doing that, we might as well kick that can down the road later in the episode, too. Let's do Marvel, then. If we're not going to start with Green Lantern, we might as well start with the other most relevant thing.
All right.
The Hall H presentation.
Yeah. Ryan Gosling as Ghost Rider. Was that 2028?
Yes.
That's obviously they haven't confirmed. I would assume Johnny Blaze, right?
Yeah, I mean, based on how old is Gosling in his 40s, right?
Yeah.
So the odds are over. That's why again, it's one of those things where I know it's not as I know from a canon perspective, it's from a popularity perspective, the character is not nearly as popular, but in many ways you can make a case, it's just like Peter Parker is really the one true Spider-Man, Steve Rogers is the one true Captain America, it's like Johnny Blaze really is the one true Ghost Rider. I know Danny Ketch has a certain following, but the odds are yes, and plus Marvel would be most likely to start with the first one. Now, you have the wild card, they did do that with Ant-Man, they did start with Scott Lang, which was a really odd friggin' choice on the surface, as opposed to the character that had such a tie to Marvel history that they kind of ignored, I mean, to a certain extent. In its prime, anyway, they ignored. But I would assume it's going to be Johnny Blaze. So, yeah, that's 2028, and then goes Black Panther 3 in December of 2028, which does raise the question, number one, since they did not give us a release date for Ghost Rider. We just told us it was 2028. So the question is Marvel going to stick to their guns and only do two movies? Because we know they said that a few years ago, they wanted to cut down the number of movies they were releasing, which to be fair and to their credit, they kind of were saddled with having to do three movie releases a few times because of COVID and because their slate got pushed back. So they weren't indefinitely playing catch up. They had no choice, but it is kind of, again, it's kind of an interesting choice if we work under the belief that they're not going to announce something, maybe a D23 that says, okay, this is going to be maybe the May 2023 release. Excuse me, I don't know why I said 2023. May, because I said D23. That's the answer to my own screw. That the 2028 May release might be a different movie they haven't announced yet, and then Ghost Rider would be the summer, and then December would be Black Panther. Because if not, again, rolling out Ghost Rider first, they would be counting on having a ridiculous amount of street cred coming out of Secret Wars that, again, people are not going to care what project comes out first. And you can make a strong case that's dangerously walking the line of repeating the mistakes that they just made in phases 4 through 6. I mean, I like Ghost Rider to a certain extent, and he's not an unknown quantity. which you could make a case works for you and against you here, as like the Eternals or Shang-Chi, which did work. But you would think you'd want to hit the ground running with something big. So that's why I'll be curious to see if D23, if maybe for the first year, especially since next year we're getting nothing again. Next year we're getting nothing except Secret Wars. So there's not even this year we're getting, at least we had Spider-Man to bide us over.
When is D23?
September, I think.
That's what I thought. I hate that it's relatively so close to San Diego, because it feels like Marvel tries to save some of their big announcements for D23 instead of SDCC.
No, and I think you're right. Obviously, they made a conscious choice that they weren't going to do any of the TV show talk, which surprised some people, because, I mean, they gave us a confirmation, I think, of when Vision Quest starts, but they didn't talk about Vision Quest at all. That's obvious. That's obviously going to be something they're going to push pretty heavily at D23, since it's going to be like a month or less than a month from the time Vision Quest is going to begin. And I'm sure they'll talk about the animated shows and things like that there, too. But it is interesting to begin with Ghost Rider. Now, again, much like, I forget how many years ago it is now, 4 or 5 years ago, much like how to a certain extent, the announcement of Thor Love and Thunder was, you know, all pun intended, the thunder was stolen by the fact that they had literally announced like 2 or 3 days before Comic-Con started that Chris Hemsworth had signed on and was coming back for Thor 4. So them announcing it, even though, yes, the idea of it being the stuff of Natalie Portman coming back and doing, you know, that the Mighty Thor, doing her storyline, the Jane Foster storyline with Thor, was borderline a surprise. But announcing the movie wasn't a surprise, because it literally broke that he had just signed on. Same way that earlier, I think that day on that Saturday, that it kind of leaked everywhere that Ryan Gosling was, they were going to announce Ghost Rider and Ryan Gosling was going to be him. So, recasting T'Challa as far as doing the son, which is, again, not exactly learning from the mistakes. So I guess Kevin, this is like doubling down on your mistake and trying to make the best of it. It's like, I'd say they definitely made a mistake, and they probably know they made a mistake not recasting T'Challa. So this is the best way of resolving that once and for all, by just aging up his son, depending on the age.
I'm not familiar with the actor.
He's been in a bunch of things, but I think many people would know him from Alien Romulus, because he was fantastic in Alien Romulus. Mm. So I'm not convinced by look that he's the perfect actor for that role, but that's cool. Now the question, of course, is from a plot perspective, does that mean they're going to depower Shuri, or is she still going to maintain power? Is she going to drink the Kool-Aid, so to speak, and depower herself? So once T'Challa Jr. II becomes king and becomes Black Panther, because which to me, I'm hoping we get an answer. Not that it's really important. I'm hoping we get an answer in Doomsday whether M'Baku took the purple flower. I'm going to guess no, because he technically isn't Black Panther. He's just King of Wakanda. Usually they go hand in hand. So that's why. That's why you would be, the winner of the challenge would end up taking the purple flower afterwards. But since he technically wasn't, they were splitting a duty between him and Shuri that normally wasn't split, that I'm going to guess the answer is no. But that thought had kind of popped in my head on and off. Would not have been the worst thing in the world for Shuri, and since they were working together, obviously, as a team, for him to have it too. But that was it from a movie perspective. I mean, as far as announcing anything new, that was it. So
Deadpool, but that's more rumor. No.
Well, yeah. The only thing about Deadpool was the fact that we know that, well, we assume, but it's all but a confirmation, that Ryan Reynolds will be in Doomsday, which of course that matches the rumors about the opening scene of the movie, as that's been out there for a long time too. So that's not really a surprise, but it was kind of cool that they did that. Yeah, you can chalk Deadpool. I mean, honestly, Deadpool 4 is as much of a confirmation as Shang-Chi 2 and Doctor Strange 3 and Thor 5, for that matter. We believe we're getting all of them, but not one of them has been officially greenlit yet, and nor does it have a release date. So, but I was personally disappointed that we didn't get either one project that either surprised people or some casting news on a project we already knew was coming. they're clearly waiting on the X-Men thing, probably until, I mean, they may be waiting on the X-Men thing until, if we work under the belief for the moment that we're not, that there's not going to be another release in 2028, that those are the only two movies. I'm going to guess they're not going to, they may not announce the casting of X-Men until either Comic-Con in 2028 or maybe D23 next year. I mean, they could technically do it in Comic-Con next year too, because literally the only thing they're going to have to push is going to be Secret Wars. So you would think there would be something else that they would want to talk about. So maybe that will be the movie.
Well, there's also NYCC, don't forget.
Yeah, but they really don't. But they really don't announce anything big there. I mean, they could do it to be different.
They have.
Yeah, but not recently. They haven't done much lately in the last few years. Mm-hmm. But you're right. You're right. But you are correct in what you said earlier, that they've been trying to funnel more stuff into D23 and less. Mm-hmm. But the Doomsday stuff was, to me, the only interesting thing was that the Doom trailer, which who knows, that might have been the character trailer they were supposed to give us back in December and January that they supposedly had, but they never released. That trailer sounded pretty cool. So again, it's kind of bullshit that they haven't released that publicly. I've seen a bootleg version of it on YouTube because some people put it up before it gets taken down. You saw a good one with the captioning on it too, so you actually can see everything that was being said. That trailer was pretty cool. They're probably going to release it. They may not release that to September. Maybe they'll release that on either Avengers on the Endgame re-release or at D23. But at this stage, I've hit the wall on, okay, we're going to show stuff in the con that you're not going to release anywhere. The movie's like 4.5 months now from coming out. It's like, I think it's time to stop playing the games with this stuff. If you're going to show it, just show it.
Yeah. They showed us that image of Doom was released, which is awesome because it's like,
oh, the poster,
probably the most comic. The poster.
Yeah, the poster's awesome.
Yeah, it's probably the most comic accurate, like from page to screen Doom costume or just any costume we've seen in the MCU.
Other than wearing pants. Other than he's wearing pants. But I guess that's just more appropriate.
It just looks awesome.
Yeah. I told Jim this. It made me actually order my first hot toy. My first hot toy. I ordered Doom.
That's awesome.
The one with the ring. There's like two different versions. I ordered the one that came with the wearable Dr. Doom ring too.
I've always wanted the Spider-Punk one that they have.
That was cool. They do have a lot of nice ones. I mean, other than them doing like a friggin' Parallax one, I mean, or an Reign of the Superman accurate Eradicator or something, we'll probably never see like a ROM or something. I don't know. Doom just, I mean, I like Doom and I think it's a really, and I feel better about it because I've looked at some of the other figures they've come out with since, like the Marvel Legends Doom and the Figuarts Doom. And I got to be honest with you, I don't think any of those two figures look all that great. But yeah. I think the Hot Toys Sideshow collectible one looks fantastic. I'm really surprised they didn't release any pops. I'm still surprised they did not have the first wave of Doomsday pops either to come out during the weekend or at least on the Monday after Comic-Con. Because obviously they had a whole shit ton of merchandise they were ready to roll out as soon as Comic-Con ended. So I'm very, very surprised by that. I think that was a mistake, considering so many times toys come out first and spoil movies, that here's the perfect opportunity where you have something that you knew you were going to roll out the trailer. You knew certain characters and certain things were going to be shown one way or the other before the weekend of Comic-Con ended. I think they could have timed a release for some of this merchandise at least a week, you know, the Monday, even today, Monday through Wednesday, either one of those 3 days post Comic-Con to drop the first wave of pops. I thought that was a missed opportunity.
Yeah. Before we move on from Marvel, I did want to touch real quick on the comic side because I saw this and I just figured it was interesting. And I'll start with as a Venom fan, it's been announced that Eddie is going to be taking the mantle of Venom back again after a new ongoing series drops following this Queen in Black crossover that actually just started today as we record this. Because MJ's been Venom for a little while, spoilers, I guess. But Eddie's getting the mantle back, so there's that. And then they also announced a 5-issue miniseries for Indiana Jones, and it's called The Sword of Pandemonium. It is by Jason Aaron and Aaron Cooter, and it's set after Raiders. But the reason I bring this up, not necessarily because I'm just a huge indie fan or anything like that, but apparently it's the first time there's been a new indie comic since the 2000s, and the first from Marvel since they had the license last in like the 80s.
Yeah, that is cool.
And they also announced, since they have the license back to do this, that they're going to put out those old Marvel stories in collected editions.
Yeah, we know that's been big lately. And I think it's good for the sake of the history of Marvel Comics that we've seen them do that with a bunch of things. We've seen them do it with with ROM and the Micronauts and things like that, that been able to at least publish or gather together and publish in graphic novel form the stuff that technically they really don't have the right to tell new stories with these characters anymore. But they've been able to put them together. And so fans can either rediscover or discover them based on things that they've heard about and maybe never been able to actually read because they haven't been available to read in new forms for like 30 plus years.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see the demand for those because I know a lot of people talk fondly of the Star Wars Marvel era.
That is true. They're doing that. Those things are coming out too, right?
I think so. Yeah. So I thought I heard a couple of people just throughout my comic reading history talking about them liking indie comics back in the day. For some reason, I'm thinking Jim said something about indie comics at one point, but I could be wrong. And I think that'd be cool just to see that. I'll check out the first issue of the miniseries. I'll be curious. I mean, Jason Aaron and Aaron Cooter are, a fairly standard team in comics at this point. So I think bar of entry is pretty low if you're curious. Plus, it's a 5-issue miniseries. So, and they set it after Raiders, one of the most popular of the movies. So, I don't know. It seems like it's a no-brainer to at least draw people in to have them give it a shot. So,
no, I think it makes sense. I think it and then like you said, they've been doing it after Raiders makes the most sense. I mean, even though if you want to technically give yourself the most time, doing it after Temple of Doom makes the most sense. Temple of Doom is technically the first one in chronological order of those movies. So for the Marvel panel, there really wasn't much else. I mean, they obviously showed some footage with from Brand New Day, which was cool. Which is interesting because again, I was looking for that to see because I actually didn't even look for the Doom leak trailer. That just kind of popped up in my feed. But I tried looking today to see if I could find the Hulk, the footage they showed of the Hulk. What's interesting about that is so many people now, we can just say it at the moment, because by the time this comes out, the movie's going to be out. And it doesn't mean anything. I mean, because it's still speculation. That supposedly what they said in that scene is that really was, when the Punisher, the Hulk, and Spider-Man at that moment, that was still Smart Hulk. That he was slipping, but Banner was still somewhere. Banner was probably in control by the end, and Banner may have been in control at moments during. So whether how that happened or not. So that just leads me to believe that's a scene a little earlier in the movie than the scene they showed in like the last full Spider-Man trailer when he's actually 100% pure Hulk. Because that would make sense if you look at the toy leak about the gamma webbing. That would kind of make sense that if there was a scene earlier in the movie when Banner almost lost control but wasn't completely out of control, that since he was working with Peter to work on his own DNA issues, that maybe he would help Peter work with him to try to come up with a method of being able to contain the Hulk if he came out. So I'll be curious to see if that actually plays out like that in the movie.
Yeah, the viral stuff about Spider-Man didn't happen until the premiere when Steve Lacy dropped the spoiler, spoiler, quote unquote, about Jean Grey on that red carpet interview, which I brought it up because the reason I have to say this, the woman giving the interview that, caused him to do the spoiler. First of all, if you re-listen to her question, she specifically says without spoiling
right
before.
Yep.
Right. That is Ray, a.k.a. Valkyrae, a.k.a. one of the biggest streamers on YouTube and Twitch. I watch her streams and I've been watching her for a long time now. I'm very familiar with Ray and her speaking patterns and the way she handles herself and so on and so forth. You could tell the entire time she was on the red carpet that she was reading off of a teleprompter or working with the cards in her hand or the earpiece in her ear. So if The fact that I still saw people on social media blaming Rey for the spoiler pissed me off. I was just like, are you serious? Like, she was doing what she was told and never veering any further than that. And she specifically said without spoilers. And after he dropped said spoiler, she was like, oh, was that a spoiler? And like tried to laugh and play it off. And then I guess maybe even clearly got instructions in her earpiece to kind of like end the little segment or whatever. She did her job. So this is not like just a fan of Valkyrae being like, hey, leave the girl alone. It's just like, I don't understand people giving this woman shit for that whole thing to begin with.
It wouldn't and to be fair, it wouldn't even matter if she had been asking, trying to, because everybody, I mean, let's be, it's almost become a game at this point where everybody in the friggin' world has been trying to get Sadie Sink or somebody else in the cast to actually confirm, you know, the who she was playing. So, because let's be honest, if anybody, if for some reason you actually asked the question, or you, whether you just by asking it or asking it in a unique way where somebody actually confirmed it, even if they, you know, didn't 100%, but like in the, but 99% confirmed it to anybody who's really paying attention and reading between the lines, that would be kind of cool for you. If you were the one they finally, 8,000 people have been looking for this information and you're the one who actually got it. But this was just, yeah. And again, it could have been garbage. It could not have been true. But I'm pretty sure, based on other things that I have read, that that's already been, that it's been confirmed in multiple places that by people who have already seen the movie. Because as we see this now, it's already premiered and people have already seen the movie. That that it is Jean. And of course, if we're saying this and it's wrong, then hey, guess what? But I'll know it's wrong by tomorrow night by when I get home, so I can edit it out.
But that's, I'm true. Sure. All right, where are we going next? Sorry.
No, it's all right. I'm trying to think what else is on the, even on the list of major. Let's just do the comic. Let's do the action figure, all the action figure stuff, because the reality is, I don't think we're gonna get an answer to this. Whether we're getting our, if we're going to be lucky enough to get our Comic-Con exclusive figures, we're not going to know the answer, I think, by the time we're done recording at this pace.
Yeah, right now, guys, it is 9:30 CST, 10:30 EST on Wednesday, July 29th, and we still don't have our emails if we won the Kyle Rayner or the Kilowog.
Yeah, that's the John Stewart. Which I, the in Ultraviolet John Stewart, which I put my name in for that too. That one, I got confirmation that I didn't win that one. And, but the question was another one in that, another one of the ones that were not obviously Lantern related, but another, a McFarlane exclusive at Comic-Con. That one's already been come and gone. But Kyle and Kilowog are still hanging out there in the analyzing entry phase. So,
well, yeah. I haven't heard any news about Jason Todd either.
Oh, I forgot about Jason Todd. You're right. And plus, yeah, like we said, there were other things besides the figures. There were T-shirts and other things too that you could put your things on the list, I think, for. Well, the next time we record, we'll have the answer. But at least it's cool that there is a chance we're gonna get these. The fact that you're gonna get these for, you know, the retail price and with shipping, of course. So you can still kind of get screwed a little. But since people aren't gonna be at Comic-Con, I guess shipping is not is literally a small price to pay. We have a shot. I mean, obviously, I've seen other people who have gotten two. I mean, so I think some people must have put themselves in for the question and John Stewart, and see, some people have gotten both. So it's not beyond the realm of possibility that not only are you going to get a Kyle, that I could get a Kyle, or I can get a Kilowog along with my John. I mean, I'd rather get, I mean, unless I'm getting the gold slash yellow Lantern Kilowog, the chase figure, unless I was getting that figure, I'd rather have Kyle. If I knew I was getting that figure, then yeah, I'd rather have that than Kyle, than the White Lantern Kyle. But I'm hoping.
Well, we know I need my White Lantern.
Well, the good news is,
it's all I put in for, man.
It's all or nothing for you. So I'm one for one. I mean, I would mind winning them all, but if I could win one more, like I said, unless I knew for a fact I was going to get the yellow gold variant for a Kilowog, I'd choose Kyle. It is interesting because I have seen some people who obviously did not choose. We talked about this last week. Who didn't? So, which answers the question? Hey, could you have put the order, the request in for this and not check the auto pay? Apparently you can, because apparently people did and they got the notification that they won. And they didn't pay in time, and then they lost their figure. So, which is unfortunate. but I feel it sucks. And you can make a case you should have had a bigger window, because maybe if they could always done a supplemental drawing of figures that for some, when people didn't. But I get it. I get why if you didn't pick the auto pay, then why you're unhappy. But I also get why they did what they did, because I think it's also fair. It's like you have a certain window. Now, I don't know what the window was. If the window was only 20 minutes or a half an hour, that's probably shitty. Especially if you did not get it, if you, let's say, didn't get a text and an email notification. But I think that's unfortunately, that's the price, I think. And you live and learn. That's an unfortunate price one probably pays for not choosing the auto pay option. The auto pay option was, and I think I saw somebody else say they won, and this would make sense. They must have chosen this option too, that they won, but they said, but they basically chose not to get it or turned it down. So that must have meant they did the same thing. They didn't choose auto pay. Mm-hmm. So they knew they won, but they just didn't bother paying. So they lost it. So, which also works in favor, yeah. I guess. It works in favor of other people like us too, who, let's say, we didn't win Kyle to start with, but maybe there's 10 or 15 figures that people didn't put an auto pay for. They were notified. Their window passes. Then 10 or 15 figures become available again, and then we end up getting them. So it does create another window of opportunity for other people too. But I get why people would be unhappy about that. But I also know. But again, depending on what the fine print says, that it may not. I don't necessarily think it's unfair either, because it's one of those things where it's based on the option that you chose, you know.
Yeah. In mid July, there were some leaks about potential McFarlane figures as well, and I didn't talk about them on the show, but half of them have been confirmed by San Diego, because we got images of Gahurl, which is the kind of orange-faced alien with the big pointy ears. We have Metaphil. We have Nat Kaloy, which is like the fish guy with the bubble over his head. And we have Green Lantern Sinestro announced as 7-inch figures for McFarland. Those four were also mentioned on that leak list. So it lends obvious credence to that leak list. And also on said list, we have a mega figure of Atrocitus. Mega figures would be like the big box ones. Like for us Lanterns fans, this would be like akin to if you got Necron, the big box, type of figures. And then we have 7-inch figures of a random Red Lantern. I forget his name, but we also have awesome. I've wanted this figure for a while. Rancor is getting a figure, which I think is awesome. And there's also a tiny little Dexstar. So that's cool. But the reason I'm mentioning this is, since these seemingly confirm the leak list, is in addition to these, apparently we might also are supposed to be getting Black Hand, Indigo, and Star Sapphire. And then the list mentions some other lanterns like AA, and then that also says Kyle Rayner. I wonder, it could be referring to the SDCC exclusive.
Probably.
And then obviously it says Tomar Ray as well. But some of these, like for instance, and when it mentions the Red Lanterns in the leak list, it refers to Hal Jordan. Rancor is obviously not Hal Jordan, but they probably just saw a white human guy and assumed it was Hal, so. I don't know, but it would seem to lend credence. Also, Star Sapphire appeared on a leak list well before this list I'm referring to, like a previous leak list. So at the very least, I feel like Star Sapphire is as confirmed as anything can be without seeing it.
No, I agree. So. The Red Lantern 3-pack at least makes me feel better that I didn't buy all those unnecessary figures to build the Atrocitus.
Fuck you.
Hey, you got to pick your battles. I mean, sometimes it's worth getting those figures. It was funny because I was thinking about this the other day, looking at the few Build-A-Figures I actually have and trying to remember all the figures that were in that wave. Because the Kilowog from Mattel, which of course broke, so I only have the bust now because everything below the waist is shattered. My Archilo that I have open, I'm pretty sure, is the Build-A-Figure. I have the Anti-Monitor that's a Build-A-Figure. And the only Marvel one that I have is Red Hulk. And the Red Hulk wave wasn't bad, if I remember correctly. That came with, I think, the Black Spider Suit Spider-Man that I sent you. It came with Adam Warlock. It came with Machine Man, because I still have those figures. and it came with a few others. So that wave actually was pretty unique, and it was not bad, and it wasn't really bad. But yeah, sometimes you got to. If there were more cool figures in that Kyle wave, I know Deathstorm was a good figure, but those are the only two I got. And let's be honest, that was the first Kyle, right? That was the shitty costume Kyle, anyway.
Yeah, right? Lime green Kyle. Yeah.
So, you know, Gil McFarlane giving us the worst Kyle costume ever, with maybe the exception of our current one, that just because people wanted a Kyle figure, and then just slowly start rolling out the costumes people really want. Now, I would assume, yes, the Kyle figure, I assume, is the white one, even though, unless the only other Kyle figure I could imagine they would give us, well, they could give us Ion, but they probably wouldn't. But they could give us that early New Guardians figure when he kind of didn't master, but still wielded the emotional spectrum for one, like 2 seconds, that costume. But yeah, those would be
power of Ion. I would lose my shit.
Yeah, that would be cool. That would be cool, at least. But I'm not sure if they could do it as easily with the same sculpt. Yeah. Just like the post Ion costume that he had, which I kind of liked. I don't know if that would lend itself to using the same mold. And Lord knows, they like using the same mold. Other figure. Again, a figure that interests me, probably in like five other people. Much like Rom, though Rom is still, if Rom's not the best Marvel Legends figure ever, it's damn close. That they're going to be in that same vein of comic book characters that they wrote that were based on a toy that they don't own the rights to anymore. They're actually doing a Croyer from the Micronauts, which is awesome. The question is, again, whether his mask is removable. Some people have asked that question, which is a good point, of whether his mask is removable. That would be awesome. And it's kind of funny that of all the Micronauts to do, they do him first, when there's a few Micronauts they could actually do on their own because they actually own the rights to, like Bug. But yet they do. But they did a Croyer, and I'm not complaining, because like Croyer is arguably the coolest, other than doing a Baron Karza, or along with doing a Baron Karza, a Croyer is probably the coolest one they could do.
Happy for you, bro.
Thanks.
There's nothing for me. I don't even recognize the character, but I did see that Rom figure in the wild at a local Walmart, and I was like, that's a really well done figure.
Rom is an awesome figure.
Yeah. All right, what's next?
I don't know, you pick something.
All right. Well, I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the other things that happened before we jump into the DC stuff, Lantern stuff. Interview with a Vampire season 4. They had their trailer drop because I believe it was actually just before San Diego that season 3 of the show wrapped. And the final episode had aired. I don't pay for AMC Plus. I will watch the show when it drops on physical or you know, goes to Vudu or sorry, Fandango now, I guess it's called. But the thing I want to talk about with it is the teaser. Did you get a chance to watch that teaser?
The Queen of the Damned?
Yes.
Yes.
So Akasha in the books is an ancient monarch. She ruled over Egypt with her husband and, you know, so on and so forth. She talks about how, like, she believes that the rule of men causes all of war and violence and destruction and injustice. And, you know, even in that Queen of the Damned movie from, you know, God, 20 years ago or whatever, however long ago that was, you see like her killing a bunch of men on an island. She just wipes out all the men of this island that her and Lestat are staying on. So like that is very much a part of her personality. But the thing that, is it just me? I know is it fair to say I'm the more liberal minded of the two of us? I don't know if that's even the right framing of it, but like, even to me, this teaser felt overly preachy, kind of like,
yes, I agree.
Misandry / feminist separatism, like the way in which they framed Akasha's hatred of men and so on and so forth through this sort of, like, it was trying to be like a call to action in the modern age. I don't know. I don't know how I felt about that. It just struck the wrong nerve with me. And I don't know how many favors they're doing themselves with that.
Yeah, because it's a tonal shift, right? They've been just dealing, because Lestat's been the main focus, right?
Yes and no. So, I mean, like, in the books, like, Lestat, even throughout the book called Queen of the Damned, he is one of three focuses, or even more, if you want to consider it, because not only are you getting Akasha and her, you know, coming back and finding Lestat, and the two of them go off and do their thing. But you also find out about some other vampires that are still around from Akasha's time. You follow them for a little bit. You follow the Talamasca for a little bit, and so on and so forth. So, like, it's not unprecedented for the story to shift focus a little bit, specifically around the Queen of the Damned story arc. So that's not necessarily a problem for me, because assuming they followed the book as closely as they could, given the way they've set this universe up thus far, I was ready for a change in our POV characters for a little bit anyways. But it's just this social justice, feminist separatism, like misandry that I mentioned, that just, I was like, what? I guess Akasha's hatred of men, like from ancient times, and her being a monarch and so on and so forth over in the ancient Egyptian area. And honestly, I think the way they framed it was like even pre-Egyptian, but close enough to be influenced in the Egyptian rule. But regardless, like, taking that and trying to spin it into a modern context, it hit me wrong. Even as a fan of all of the books from whence this show came, I just, like, yeah, Akasha hates men, but, like, not this way.
Judging it from the, you know, without having any ties to it, it's like, yeah, I would see that. I could see how that could turn people off. But then again, obviously they're counting on the core audience not being turned off by it, I suppose. So,
yeah. Yeah, it bugged me a little bit. So I thought I'd bring that up. The other thing I wanted to mention real quick is apparently it was in my honorable mentions or whatever, I believe, at the beginning of the year when we were talking about movies that are coming out. Ray Gun. They showed the first 7 minutes of it at Comic-Con. Apparently, we haven't seen that online, but according to a Gizmodo article that wrote about the first 7 minutes, what was shown was apparently just the film's cold open. But Gizmodo says, what you do get in this is a sense of tone. Even though the film has some wild creatures in it, it feels much more like a traditional detective film. It's methodical, it's clever, it's cheeky. You get the sense this isn't a kids movie at all. It's a Brad Bird movie, which gives me some hope. I'm looking forward to, like, I'm always excited when animation takes a different tack. And, you know, like, even if it is still technically geared towards children, it does something interesting with the animation style, or does something interesting with the storytelling, or just whatever. Like, you know, I talk about it all the time, but Into the Spider-Verse, I love those films and the way they were done, and it's just a treat to see it on the screen. So whenever someone does something interesting in animation, I'm hyped for it. And according to what people are getting out of that first 7 minutes that was screened at Comic-Con, I think my interest earlier in this year in this upcoming film called Ray Gun, which apparently, by the way, comes out December 18th on Netflix, is supposed to be fairly good. So
certainly has a good pedigree to it. So you would assume that it there's every reason to believe that it's going to be a good movie.
And the last thing is, did you see the Matchbox trailer?
No, I heard about it. That's the one thing that you mentioned that I did not get a chance to go to watch. But yeah, so I'm gonna have to take your word for it as far as
it looks like, and you might feel differently, but I hope you'll see what I mean when you do watch the trailer. It feels like a modern Jumanji, except that whole structure did a Fast and Furious film. That yeah. Level of comedy, that the I don't know. But the thing that bothers me about it is apparently this group of friends is called the Matchbox Gang or whatever. But because as kids they all played with Matchbox cars, and now the kids are all grown up, and one of them, which is played by John Cena, is now a spy. So when he comes back to visit the group of his friends, you know, they get kidnapped because they're after something the spy was working, John Cena's character was on. So now they get pulled into his adventure. And obviously there's a lot of car chases. And there's a scene where they go down and they pick a bunch of cars to choose from for their mission or whatever. I'm just very curious how Matchbox, the Matchbox movie is going to be. Because aside from flashbacks to their childhood playing with Matchbox cars, how is a semi more comedic Fast and Furious film in the vein of the modern Jumanji films anything like the namesake of Matchbox? It's just it's like inspired by instead of a Matchbox movie.
I could see that concern. And again, it makes you, it does, even though it's still a thing, but not, I don't think it's as much of a thing as it was. That also makes you wonder how much of an audience there is, potentially, too. I mean, I'm going to collect. People still collect, and obviously a lot of people still have stuff like they used to play with or use when they were kids. Like, I actually have. I was always more Matchbox than Hot Wheels. So while I did have some Hot Wheels, and I had the little, shaped like a tire carrying case for my Hot Wheels, I still have my Matchbox case. I think I still have all the only Matchbox cars I might not have that I ever had, but ones that completely broke when I was a kid and I got rid of. So I would have an emotional attachment to it. So I would be curious to see what it is. So yes, depending on how Matchboxy it is, you were correct. It might make or break the appeal to the core audience.
It just confused me too, because Mattel owns both Matchbox and Hot Wheels. So why isn't it just a Hot Wheels movie? Isn't that the better known of the two brands? And if you're going to make a movie,
I don't know. I don't necessarily know if that's true. It's going to be a shared universe, Chad. That's what they're building towards, the crossover.
No, yeah, we'll see. Look, don't get me wrong. Like, despite my criticism, the way I described it, it looks like a fun, like, turn your brain off type of film. But I don't get the Matchbox of it all. So I guess we'll see. But I think with that, we just move into the main event, huh? Unless you had anything else?
I do not think I have anything else. So we might as well, you were correct, we might as well delve into the lantern-y of it all.
All right. I haven't had a chance to watch the entire panel. I've seen recaps of what was announced and talked about at the panel, but I haven't watched the panel itself.
I didn't watch the whole panel either, so don't worry about it. It's not like we had too many huge info dumps of like, oh, that's something we didn't expect, or that, or that's really intriguing. There were only a few things that we actually got. So
confirmation that Laura Linney is a Guardian.
Yes, which, right, again, we'd certainly speculated on that based on what she said in the last trailer that we got. To me, that it was pretty clear she wasn't playing Carol, but based on what she was saying to John. So, which is interesting onto itself, because at least based on what we've seen of her so far, she seems like a shit disturber. She seems like whoever she is, she's trying to sow the seeds of discontent between Hal and John, especially mostly John. She's trying to build up the resentment and the issues, bring out the issues John has with Hal. So, which naturally
makes Scar
or Krona. Because not they don't necessarily, okay, even have to gender swap for her to be Krona, because they can, if they're able, mm-hmm, to shapeshift, they can appear any way they want, even though if it's not the same gender, it would make no sense that they'd be limited to, oh, you could be anybody, but they have to be the same gender. So yeah, Krona because of the Manhunter thing makes me think it's a possibility. Or yes, I would say if it's not Krona, it could be Scar, because Scar, obviously, if they have any intentions of doing Blackest Night, plus she would be the most prominent, if she really is a female, the most prominent female guardian that basically ended up having a secret agenda.
Yeah, that would be a shit stirrer for sure. It wouldn't be Sayid.
Nope.
Unless Sayid has inherited Ganthet's affinity for screwing with people just to get the best out of them.
Yeah.
I don't know.
The thing is, we don't know the context. We don't know if this conversation is taking place back in the 2016 storyline versus the 2026, we assume, but it could be the way it's spliced together. It does seem like, if even if you could delve into the Sinestro stuff, which we'll talk about in a second, that it certainly seems there's a lot of people who seem invested on pitting Hal and John against each other and building uneasiness between the two. Not necessarily maybe for the same reason, but it seems there's a lot of that going on in this trailer. And that's the vibe you get of what's going. So that's, yeah. The Sinestro stuff was cool, other than they lost a lot of street cred by having Sinestro call him Hal. Unless there's a particular reason why, because Sinestro is trying to manipulate him, and he's having that moment of seemingly trying to be really mentor-y to him, and affectionate, going back to the way things were maybe, you know, back in the early days between the two of them. Or when they were, maybe not even the early days, because he probably was a dick to Hal in the early days. Maybe when they were the closest to being on equal footing before Sinestro flipped, that it just seemed out of character, because we know Sinestro never refers to Hal Jordan as Hal. That's like maybe 1% of the time. It's always Jordan. So that struck me as immediately. But there could be a plot reason why he's doing that.
Yeah, or they just forgot and screwed up.
Well, that would be worse. I mean, not that Tom King is the biggest Green Lantern guy, but still. It could be the equivalent of, again, this is a Green Lantern tie in a way, that when I think the first Darth Maul miniseries that Ron Mars wrote, and he had Sidious talking to Maul, and he called him Darth Maul to his face, and it's like he'd never call him Darth Maul to his face, he'd call him Lord Maul, because that's how all the apprentices were referred to by the Emperor or Darth Sidious. It was always Lord Vader, Lord Tyrannus, Lord Maul. He would never call him Darth Maul to his face. He'd refer to him as Darth Maul to somebody else, but if they were having a conversation, it would be the apprentice would refer to him as Master, and he would call them Lord, whatever, insert Sith Lord apprentice's name. So it's kind of like that, but I'm going to think maybe there's a reason for it. Playing up the fear, quote unquote, maybe Hal has of being replaced, and that the fear that he's nothing without the ring, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to break down the trailer without having it in front of me, because I don't want to mess around with having to mute my phone and all this stuff. But like, definitely more green, definitely more space, more personality showcase of Hal. Less cursing.
that was a plus. It was something that you were correct. I almost did not even focus in on that at all. Maybe that's the reason they beat us over the head the first time, just because it's easier to go down when you're not doing it. It's like, oh yeah. Oh, maybe this is a trailer that they're hoping is going to appeal to more. Maybe each trailer has kind of been geared to a different part of their potential audience.
Yeah. Confirmation, obviously, we got that the Manhunters are the villain, which I like, because it has been way too long at this point in comics since the Manhunters have been any sort of a threat. I know there are big bad in Core right now, but like, are they really? Did anybody really reading Core think the Manhunters were at the end of the day going to give the Core any sort of problem? Because I didn't, even with taking Aya's ability and going after the entities, like that's exactly what they had to do to the Manhunters to make them a threat in the comic book, is have them upgrade to Aya's ability and chase down emotional entities to just try and make them something new to threaten the Core. It has been so long since the Manhunters have meant shit to anybody. Because even during like Sinestro Core War, like, yeah, it was cool to see like the amount of lanterns that Sinestro had on his side. But the Manhunters as a part of all that were never a part of the threat. They were just there to fill space on the page to show that Sinestro had the numbers.
Well,
and so also, like they were cannon fodder.
Well, to a large extent, but it was also to show off Cyborg Superman's abilities.
Yeah. That's true. So there's that. But like but realistically, thinking about the mythos and thinking about introducing the mythos to people who aren't familiar with the mythos, of course, the first police force before the Green Lantern Corps that the Guardians abandoned or dismantled or destroyed or disowned or whatever way in which the Guardians supposedly in this story have dealt with the Manhunters in their universe before creating the Green Lantern Corps. Of course, the first outing of the Guardians' attempt to police the universe, their failed attempt, should be a legitimate threat to the current way in which the universe is policed. So, like, yeah, they're familiar with the power set. They have their own abilities. They have the numbers, so on and so forth. So, like, I like it. I like the idea that the Manhunters are a threat again. I'm down for that.
No, I agree. And that was, as we know, that was a rumor that was circulating before that trailer dropped. And then, of course, how they're going to handle the Manhunters is a whole nother story, since they seemingly are potentially confusing people, maybe on purpose, about what the Manhunters are, which we might delve into. Maybe we won't in this discussion now. Plus, we already knew that one character was rumored to be Atrocitus for the longest time. And then you bring the Manhunters into this, and then you have the fact that he's the one giving that speech about the Manhunters. It's like, yeah, I mean, the odds of him not being Atrocitus. Even though one of the issues I have, though, is it seems too many damn people can shapeshift in this. I think that's kind of a problem. Yeah. Because it looks like the Guardians can shapeshift, the Manhunters can shapeshift, and if that is Atrocitus, then he can shapeshift. It's like, that's kind of too much shapeshifting to me. Unless there's a reason for it. Unless there's some tie-in to why unless it's all related to Owen Tech in some way, why they're all able to do it. I think it's a little bit too much of a good thing, potentially.
Yeah, potentially. Potentially. I think, and I'll be making a video on this on socials so you guys can check it out. But like, I remember there was like an interview or something with a guy that was playing Atrocitus, or whatever his supposed character name was supposed to be at one point. And I forget what that whole conversation was. I had it down at some point. I was just looking for it, but I can't find it. But basically some quote about the way in which he described his character, or Deadline described his character, or something like that. Basically, if you combine that with the idea that he's supposed to actually be Atrocitus, and the fact that the Manhunters are now confirmed in the show, and the fact that the information we got about the Manhunters in the trailer comes from the character we believe to be Atrocitus, that summary I think that Deadline had made about the character makes it just sound exactly like we're getting Atrocitus. So, like, I'd be surprised at this point if we're not. Plus, there's a rumor that one of the scenes they showed during San Diego, of the clips that they showed beyond, obviously, the trailer, was apparently, like, there was this scene where there was some fighting going on, and, like, on the other side of a door was a bunch of red light. So people are speculating it could be a, like, full-on Red Lantern kind of a situation. Obviously, we haven't seen that. We don't know what that looks like. We don't know. It, you know, could be just fire and flashes, and, you know, the Manhunters are red, so at least in the comics, so maybe who the hell knows. But
that's
like,
true. Anton. Anton's the character.
Yeah, Anton. There's all of that. I like the trailer. Especially, I like Hal. Yes, he's old. Okay, they have made the show now. They're doing the press tour for the show. It is a done deal. I can't keep fighting the fact that he's old anymore. Okay, I just got to take it for what it is. Taking it for what it is, I like Kyle Chandler's Hal. He's funny. He's a bit of an ass. He's a flirt. When he does at the end of the trailer, when he does the whole bottle opener thing, and John rolls his eyes like, oh, come on. Tell me that's not Hal and John.
Assuming, of course, the eye roll is actually from that scene, which it may not
True.
Be. I think the way it's spliced, I don't necessarily know it looks like it's natural. But I would say this is a better Hal trailer, as far as generally speaking, showing off who Hal is and making it more in sync. Still an issue with John, with this attitude that he has toward. I mean, maybe this is going to be something that's going to be addressed in the show. That he kind of has this cocky attitude, like, oh yeah, I'm better than you. I've always been better than you. I'm just been waiting in line to get what's mine. This, maybe there's going to be like a comeuppance moment when he's going to realize that, okay, that I kind of did not look at this correctly. But it does not come across well as for Jon Stewart, because that's not really Jon Stewart's character for the most part. So that's still something that, and they really seem to just continually double down on him having that attitude towards Hal, like, you know, that we both know I'm better at this than you are, and all these lines from the other trailers. It's just, yeah, I don't know. That to me is still going to be something they have to address and make it, or else he's just going to come across as a cocky prick. And then, regardless of, I mean, it could be maybe the 2016 John is going to be a cocky prick, and then we're going to, and then the 2026 John is going to be an entire, is going to, and that's where we're going
to
see the change.
That's what I was about to say.
Yeah.
That's what I was about to say. It could be every bit of cocky prick John dialogue that we've gotten thus far as actually from the 2016 scenes.
Oh, I'm going to assume the majority of them are, because if the spoilers are true, well, you know, they're probably not going to have much interaction in 2026. but that still bothers me. It just seems, and again, but there could be a reason for it, like we talked about earlier tonight, because it seems like there's a lot of people that seem to have that have agendas pushing Hal and John in opposite directions. They're wanting Hal to be replaced for a certain reason, and wanting John to resent Hal and have issues with Hal, or having Hal not being willing to train John, even though John has a lot of potential. He doesn't want to train him. And we should point out one of the things that did come out, I guess, in the panel was the fact that the Guardians seem to have issues or suspicions about Hal because of his ties to Sinestro. So that they may, that what, whether you're viewing it literally or just figuratively, that they are openly questioning how much of Sinestro is actually in Hal, which I guess on one level you can understand it, since he was the trainer and the mentor. But then again, depending how long ago it's been since Sinestro did what he did, and how long he's been an enemy of the Corps, how long he's been locked up and knocked down a peg from being an active threat. If Hal's been consistently loyal to the Guardians all this time, then that kind of seems, that again raises the specter that there may be something else, another reason why, another plot point that we don't know, why they think that, okay, he seems like he's loyal to us, but we don't necessarily believe this. Or they're seeing too much of Hal's attitude as he gets older that mirrors Sinestro.
Please, since when have the Guardians needed a reason to be suspicious of Hal Jordan?
No, I know, but I'm just saying in the context of this world.
Yeah.
Because it's like we're being, if you're just a viewer, you're being dropped in. And if this guy's been Green Lantern for like about, what are we going to assume? Like about close to 20 years, probably, based on, if the scenes are accurate, that John's watching him.
He's a kid watching him.
That if that's accurate, then Hal's going to have been Green Lantern for probably at least close to 20 years, if not a little bit more than 20 years. That's a pretty, you have a pretty long body of service, literally, in this case. So if the Guardians still don't trust Hal, I mean, but again, they could give you a reason why, a logical reason why, even a reason why during the course of the story that we're thinking, well, maybe there could be something too. Why? And again, if you're a Green Lantern reader, then you're going to just say, oh, because they're doing something along the lines of Parallax, even if he's not going to be Parallax. That could be something in the back of the Guardian's mind, what they're afraid of and what they're thinking and why there's suspicion there because of Sinestro and what Sinestro has learned and what Sinestro knows that the rest of the Corps doesn't know. But we'll see. I mean, I think it probably was the best Hal Jordan trailer. I think they're all,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, the stuff with the bottle opener was funny. The stuff with John, having John fly and then John creating the energy construct, which seemingly is going to be a big deal. The fact that he's creating like a living, breathing energy construct, because Hal seems, at least unless again, there's something we're out of context that we're not getting from what they showed us, Hal seems pretty taken aback by the fact that he's capable of creating like a living, breathing, functioning construct.
I do like when he's preparing himself to fly, and he like jerks upward, that Hal like steps
back. Yes, he
back,
flinches.
Like,
yes, that was great. It's like, what the,
what the hell are you doing? Just lift off the ground, dumbass. Right.
Yeah. That was funny.
Check out our social medias, guys, because I've gone into this in depth elsewhere with some video content. So there's that. But the people online that are saying, you know, oh, Manhunters, that means Martian Manhunters going, just stop. Please stop. because like I get it. Like there and again, I point to the social media stuff. There's ways that the Martian Manhunter's tied to the Manhunters. So like is it possible that in a show about a police force, an intergalactic police force, that they talk about a bunch of different aliens, among which are the Manhunters of Mars? Yes, it is technically possible, but please, God, will you let it go between now and the time this show comes out? Because people are literally, anytime someone is arguing about it could be Manhunters, they go, well, what about the X on the back? The X on the back is a white X over a red costume. And guess what? I don't see anybody suggesting Adam Strange is going to be in this fucking show. Because a white X over a red costume is more Adam Strange's costume than fucking Martian Manhunters, who is a red X over green skin. So my God, will we please let this go? That is either a Manhunter who can shapeshift or a Guardian who can shapeshift.
Tomatoes, tomatoes, Chad. Tomatoes, tomatoes.
So, like, I just, the amount of people going, oh, Manhunter? Martian Manhunter? It is on every platform.
No, I know.
People are making videos about it. Like, I just, like, okay. It is, I'm so happy for you that you know something about Martian Manhunter and that, even though you're wrong, it got you hyped up. Congratulations. I'm just honestly, I'm happy that there are our Martian Manhunter fans. So like, great. There's a fan for every character in the DCU. And I'm glad that the Martian Manhunter fans are getting hyped about something. So cool. Good on you. But it's not. Okay.
Yeah. This is this week's equivalent of the Captain Hydra. Or the discussion we had last week. It's the same thing. It's kind of like, if you know, you know. It's like there's probably less than a 5% chance that it's Captain Hydra. Because if you know about what's supposed to be going on in Doomsday and the consistent plot points in Doomsday, and some of the stuff you saw in the trailer, which kind of goes along the of confirming this stuff, he's Steve Rogers. He looks different. There's a reason he looks different. He's friggin' Steve Rogers. Am I happy he looks different? No. Like I said, I'm not get. There's almost nothing they're gonna be able to do to make convince me to get a Steve Rogers pop from Doomsday when him wearing that stupid outfit. I'm sorry, I just can't imagine myself bringing myself to do it. But it's still gonna be Steve Rogers. So yes, it's very much the very much this week's equivalent. Hope maybe next week we'll have another thing. You know, Sadie Sink really wasn't Jean Grey, but they want us to think it was Jean Grey. Go F yourself.
Or the people that are saying that the costume that Ryan Reynolds wore for Deadpool is his Jean Grey suit.
Oh, God.
Because it's made of denim and was gray.
At least that's a clever play on words, though. If nothing.
Yeah. Regardless. Also, speaking of Funkos, we saw that we're getting some Lanterns Funkos. We have Hal Jordan in his suit and his battering ring. We have John in his civilian clothes, and we have Sinestro in his prison uniform.
And PJs. Sinestro and onesie. Again, talk about an interesting wave or selection. You have one fantastic. At least we win on this. At least we have to take the victory lap when we can get one. At least as far as the initial three Funkos that have been released for the show, hands down, the Hal Jordan is the best.
Agreed.
So that's the one that's probably going to be the only victory if you're a Hal Jordan fan you're really going to take out of this show, or one of the few. But that pop is friggin' awesome. Costume looks good. The battery, again, the battery, much like the ring, is interesting because there's so much yellow in it, yellow or gold in it, which, again, maybe there's a plot point reason why that's the case. But who knows? Maybe there's a reason why there's a yellow weakness into the ring, partially because of this yellow built into the battery and the ring. I don't know. That's cool. The other two are it's an interesting choice, though. John in civilian clothes, but that's following the McFarlane method of, hey, you're a John Stewart fan. This is the first pop you're getting from the show. It's kind of a lousy, unimportant sculpt, generally speaking, but you're a John Stewart fan, so you're going to go buy it. Or if you're like someone who will remain nameless, Chad, who's a completist, he's going to have to buy it anyway. But if you're just buying it by skull, if you were a John Stewart fan, you'd be waiting to see him in uniform, probably.
Yeah. No, I've got to have it. So also, Am I alone in feeling that Sinestro is behind whatever's going with the Manhunters? Am I 100% on that theory? No. But he knows an awful lot for somebody in jail.
Sinestro almost has to be involved in part of what's going on. I mean, even if his role in this is trying to get Hal to be susceptible to fear, the fear of being replaced, the fear of not being good enough outside of being Green Lantern, or going along with that, or instead of that, him trying to push Hal off the playing field, off the chessboard, because he knows Hal's a problem. So he'd rather take his chances with John Stewart. And that's why you have to wonder about what's going on with the Guardians too. Is this a rogue guardian that is involved with Sinestro? So is that Guardian the one helping to plant the seeds of distrust with Hal? Because even though Hal is actually the best champion that they have, he's also the biggest threat to what they're really trying to do. So if we can push him out, then whatever that Guardian is doing with Sinestro has a greater chance of success. That's why Krona would be perfect.
Yeah. I mean, it does seem very mirrored. The Guardian is sowing distrust in John, or distrust in Hal to John, and Sinestro is sowing the other side of that. He's making sure that Hal has reason to distrust or dislike John, so that they're the two of them working together in tandem to put those two on a collision path. It just feels too elegant.
Yeah, I would agree. I would say that there's probably some smoke to that fire.
Yeah, but that's about it, right? Oh, I will say, just because this is how I'm going to be operating. If you don't have HBO Max, an HBO Max subscription right now, as you hear this, this is the time to start thinking about setting aside some cash to pay for that subscription, because we're coming up on it any day now. So it is time. With my next paycheck, I will be using some of those funds to pay for my HBO Max subscription. So it is time to start looking for a deal and setting things up.
Yes, and we'll also have to figure out how we're going to handle that, if we're going to be doing something live after the show when the episode drops, or we're going to be talking about it, or doing like a recap episode, like whether it's a video or something, like on a Monday or something afterwards. We have to figure out what we're going to do. I would say, if you're waiting, this is probably the time to get ready. House of the Dragon is getting closer and closer to the end. A show I'm completely dispassionate about, but still watch every week. Hasn't been bad. The season really hasn't been bad. I just don't care about almost anybody in it. So that kind of has a big, big negative effect after a while.
Well, thanks for listening, guys. And if people want to reach out to us, what do they do?
LanternCast@gmail.com. The website is LanternCast.com. You can follow us on Blue Sky, Twitter, like us on Facebook, #GeoCast to track us down. On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, wherever you listen to us on, please leave us a positive review. Last but not least, if you'd like to leave us a text or a voicemail, 708-LANTERN, and let us know what you think.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.